Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup Podcast. I'm Joe. Thank you very much for listening today. Today we have Billy Jones, who's the VP of Marketing over at Hootsuite. Today we have a chat, marketer to marketer, all about the different ways in which we've been using AI and hopefully the ways that you can also learn to use it too. Neither of us profess to be AI on the edge of AI technology, but what we are is two marketers doing our job day to day. And hopefully we've got a little bit of inspiration for you to do something that you may have not done before. We chat a little bit about how AI works and then also the applications that you can use to save you time. It's an interview format, so it's nice and easy. I do apologize for the slightly bad audio on my side. For some reason, I chose to not click the button which logged on my good mic, and instead I used my laptop mic for this session. So you'll, unfortunately, that's part of the process for this time and a lesson learned for next. That being said, it was still a great chat and I really hope you enjoy it. Before we get going, I just want to say a big thank you to this week's featured sponsor, who are Klaviyo. Klaviyo have just released a report where they've surveyed over 5,000 e-commerce marketers and decision makers into their perceptions and their thinking around Black Friday. That report is free to access. It's available on our newsletter and also on the Klaviyo website. They're great partners, so we'd definitely recommend that you check them out. With all that said, now is the time to head over to the podcast with my introduction and the session with Billy Jones from Hootsuite. I really hope you enjoy.
Let's start with some AI basics. And so for a marketer just starting with AI, what's one piece of advice that you give them today?
Yeah, you know, we were talking earlier, and I'm not on here to be like a super, super duper AI expert. What I would say is that I'm a marketer that's busy, that works in tech, that doesn't want to get left behind and also wants to get stuff done. So my tip, and it's one I've lived myself, is like, don't be scared of it and just start playing with everything that you can. Because whether we like it or not, a lot of this stuff is going to be infused into our workflows. So the more you can kind of get a working knowledge of some of the basics, the better. And I've even found, and have fun. Like there's certain things, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but like, if you've got a little time and want to play around with Midjourney, like if I didn't have children, I would just sit and play with it all day. And sometimes I play around with it with them. So I would say just have a go, which I know isn't the most sophisticated advice, but that's the advice I give people, and it's the advice I give myself.
Well, that's how we get better too. And even that as a reframe to start off with, and like with so much of the AI conversation, a lot of it's riddled in doom and gloom and fear. And so just to reframe the conversation right from the beginning, not ignoring that, but just sort of saying, yeah, there's some real positives too, is really, really fantastic. So thank you for that. Before we were getting started, you mentioned this as well, and we called it our holy moments. And so what have been the biggest sort of like holy crap moments for you where you've been like, oh shoot, you know, this is something really, really interesting?
Yeah, I'll give two holy crap moments. Also, we'll talk about this. I need to figure out how I can get in your video intro with a dance move. So maybe at the end goes in, we can work on that. But so I'd say the two things, like one is I was working on a project recently where I had to write a brief for creative people, and we had a very specific audience, and it was marketing directors and finance. So I started chatting with ChatGPT and got to the point where I was like, hey, you know, can you give me the standard demographic for a North American marketing director? And they can comb through. And again, not all this stuff is cited maybe the way you need it, but it can be quite directional. So I went in and got demographics for marketing director. And then I was like, okay. And it was really clear. And then I thought, let's push it a little further and said, give me their top pain points and challenges. And they gave me kind of three, like five bullets of challenges, sorry, and 5 points of why they love their job. And then I thought I'd pull it a little further and I said like, hey, can you synthesize quotes from marketing directors and publications you have access to and create like unique 3 quotes to help me understand who these people are? And in about 10 minutes, I would say I created like a pretty amazing segmentation and persona that like totally changed the briefing. And to get that amount of work, usually probably, I mean, let's talk about a day worth of research, but like the research assistant aspect of basically in 15 to 20 minutes, having a clear, here's who this person is, here are their pains, here's their gains, here's some quotes. I also had fun with it. And then I popped into Midjourney and was like, hey, I'm looking for a 45-year-old marketing director in finance. And they gave me a transparent person with a beautiful business suit, a lady to match that persona. And that became an anchor point of a briefing with teams. And it created a conversation where we like to start with the person versus who we are, the brand. And we had a lot of pieces that we could talk to. And I was just simply blown away by that. I think that's one from the strategic end. And then the second piece that like I've got eyes on is like, I'm convinced like image generation is just going to kill the stock photography industry. So if you have right now, I've talked to my legal team. So I've talked to lawyers. So don't worry. If you have a professional Midjourney account, you can use what you create commercially because there's no copyright. You don't own it. But the idea of, we were working on something recently where we needed to talk to people in education. But we shot all of our photography, our beautiful photography that we shot was for small business. And I'm just absolutely allergic to stock photography because you can sort of sniff it out. So we started playing around and getting images of teachers on campus. We made their hair color match our brand colors so that we could have pops of saffron and tea green in it and make it branded. And we've been using it in advertising and trying to test it against our existing photography. But within there, that took a little while longer because you got to play with the prompting of it. But I mean, stuff that would have cost us thousands of dollars to shoot because we had that much creative control, or hundreds of dollars, and not be happy with it. We got it for free, and we got it within 20 minutes.
I mean, it is absolutely crazy. And the way that it's changing and growing, and even at the beginning of the year, it was so much different to now. I mean, with both of those answers, how much do you use those AI in these instances as the endpoint? You know, so are you going in and sort of saying, here's the brief, and then you go, ta-da, done. Or do you, you know, iterate upon it? Because like, these are two massive wins for marketers right now. We're speaking about saving time in today's session. There you go. Two big things, you know, image creation and strategic briefing, et cetera. But, you know, is that the end point, or how do you sort of modulate it?
I think that's a brilliant question. I don't use it as the end point, and I can't tell if I do that because I think I'm some smart marketer. Because I'm like, I paid off my student loans, so there's no way these robots can do it as good as me. I would say like what I've used it for, and I don't know if it's arrogance, but is I feel like it gets you started way, way quicker. So even as, you know, my background is sort of like an account lead at BBDO, like a strategist more than a creative, but to me, like writing a brief is a creative act. The good brief writers, the good strategists, it's a creative act. So the hardest part for a creative person is staring at that blank page. And like, where do you get started with this thing? I've got 2 days and I need to brief 8 people. You can get rid of that blank page in a couple of seconds with AI. And then I think it's about curating that information and tailoring it to make it unique. So when I'm writing briefs, I play a lot with that research assistant aspect of it, but I do try to tweak it. from a creative point, I think as a non-visual executor, right? Like I have pretty bad design skills. Like I can Photoshop my friends' heads onto embarrassing photos, but I can't go put in the square. I can't go put stuff in marketing collateral. What's really interesting is like, I can close my eyes and see something, and I'm getting to the point where I could probably prompt it in Midjourney and then give it to a designer, right? So we were working on an email and we were trying to show, like in my head, I was like, I want a modern businesswoman kind of sitting at a desk surrounded by social icons to show that like our brand is the hub for all the stuff. And I created like a bad version where it was goofy and like they had 8 fingers and the social icons were these weird things. Okay. But then when we created the email, I said, can you create something like this? And that got us from 0 to 100 much, much quicker rather than me trying to explain it. So I guess to answer your question, I feel like it gets rid of the blank page and it can get you like 60% there, and it can do it like 3 times faster.
Yes. There's nothing more intimidating than a blank sheet of paper. It's the most scary thing. So as that, as you say, to begin with, is a wonderful thing. Folks, I can see that's 23 open questions already, which is brilliant. what I'd ask is that you give a thumbs up to any of the questions you really want prioritizing, just to make sure that we capture those, and we'll take it from there. But I really appreciate everyone being so fantastic on the questions so far. And I can see the one from Nicole, which was already at the top, just like going tick, 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 tick. So we'll take that one, which is a good one for the introduction as well. So Nicole asks, what do you think is the single most important way marketers should be using AI at the moment? So it might be some of the question that you just answered, but if there's anything that hits your ear slightly different.
I mean, I think that's a good question. I can only give my point of view is, for me, and again, I might be biased, but to me, it is like this strategic research assistant, like the synthesization, I think that's a word, the coffee shop. The ability to take a bunch of complex information and distill it down for you is going to save you so much time. So there's the segmentation example I said, but you can copy and paste text, a full PDF of you're doing a research piece. Let's say you work and you're trying to talk to small businesses and you have Salesforce's State of Small Business 2023, which is always a great report. I don't work for them, but they do a good job. I could sit there for 45 minutes with my headphones on, bust up my highlighter, print and highlight it. Or I could say, hey, can you synthesize like the top five things for this? So to me right now, and it might just be me, it might just be the tech, but the ability to have like a dedicated research assistant. And then also like playing, like what I would do too is like, I feel like there's a renaissance for adjectives, like adjectives and their importance in this prompting. So like, I'm trying to think of examples. I keep looking on the left because I've just been using AI this whole time, but you can punch in, let's just say 100 pages of a document that you think might be helpful to what you're working on. And then you can say, can you please, because you should be nice, they're almost human. You can say, can you please give me 10 key takeouts, but make them insightful. Or like one thing I did is I often think like Jerry Seinfeld would have been a good brand strategist, you know, like what's the deal with small business? So I've done stuff where I'm like, read this document and then give me a summary as if Jerry Seinfeld would do it. And they'll give you like, they'll read it back to you like Jerry Seinfeld where they pointed it out. I almost wish I had an example in here. I did. So here's an exact example. I was talking about a social media ROI paper and ChatGPT said, what's the deal with impressions? They tell me my post got 1,000 impressions. Oh, did it? Because my wallet is under impression that those impressions don't pay my bills. Hey, come on. And that just starts such an interesting conversation inside like a strategic, you know, conversation that you're having. So sorry, long-winded again.
No, long research assistant. No, I love that. Thank you. And, you know, I just to add to that and sort of share an experience then, one of my frustrations early on was that I'd ask ChatGPT for an answer. And then I would subsequently, which it wasn't built for, I'd then ask it for sources. You know, and I found in the first instance, so this was maybe 8 months ago or something like that, that the sources that they cited, they're all going to 404 pages. And so for folks to understand how these things work, they basically guess the next word. So you've got a huge, huge data set, and then ChatGPT spits out what it thinks the next word is going to be. And so it was guessing what these reports were sort of made up of, the citations. This has now changed with the integration with Bing. So if you pay for a premium ChatGPT version, then with ChatGPT 4, it integrates with Bing, and it can actually give you the sources that you want. And so to the point of your answer, with the research assistant stuff, not only can you sort of find the information that you need a little bit easier by distilling long things, but you can also find sources. And the last thing I can add to that is that, like, I was able to ask the questions in a far more natural way. So rather than doing, like, the Google thing where you sort of, like, best restaurants near me, you know, I was able to say, what are the best restaurants near me that serve Thai food or whatever it is? And I know that Google would have given me that answer, but it was a slightly different way of just addressing the system, which felt more natural to me. So it's interesting. We've actually got, this is the next question that comes up, because we've got Sue asking, and Ross asking about the best tools to use and where to start. And this was one of the things that was picked up in your first answer as well. So we've spoken a little bit about ChatGPT and Midjourney. Let's not assume that people know what those things are. So could you speak through those two tools and any other tools that you're using on a day-to-day basis, and give you the opportunity to speak about your own, of course, as well.
Sure. I can also start with, like, and I wish I had pulled this, but I've just gone onto LinkedIn, and if I see there's a bunch of people that are all in on AI for marketing, and I've just clicked a follow, because they'll often put out these like power rankings of AI tools. I would say like 8 out of 10 of them are overcharging for stuff you don't need, but like there's an industry of AI experts, and I can't tell if I just became one by being on this podcast, but I don't pretend to be like I started. I think the tools, like, to me, ChatGPT is, I think everybody knows that now. I recently like upgraded and got my company. It's like $10 a month for ChatGPT-4, and you can tell a big difference on it, especially with like sourcing and getting data out of it. So like that's the simple one. Another one that everybody knows, but I don't know if they know, is AI, that I use all the time, is Grammarly. Like, I have Grammarly plugged into all my stuff to make sure that like I don't sound stupid. And then Midjourney I talked about, which is, I would say, the most advanced image generator. And what's interesting is it lives on Discord, which is like a modern chat room. My favorite part about Midjourney, if you're interested to check them out, is they actually, and I subscribe because I'm a nerd, is they run a monthly publication of all the beautiful images that are created on Midjourney. So you get like this magazine that feels like an art magazine, but underneath it, it'll be these amazing pieces, and you'll actually see the prompts. Because a lot of this stuff, especially in Midjourney, but ChatGPT-4, is like, there are people that are better at AI than us, and it's because they're practicing how they prompt it. Like I said earlier, like there's going to be a renaissance for adjectives. How you ask questions give you back different things. So like those are the tools that I use on a regular basis. There's a lot of video generation ones. I wish I had it. I was looking at it last night. There's a lot of interesting things you can do, like turning images into video. And then it popped up in the chat, but I have all my designers playing with, I think it's Firefly, which is the Adobe version, which is literally like what we've always wanted as non-designers, where it's like, you get a picture and you're like, make, you know, get rid of that road, get rid of those things. Sure. So I don't, you know, I'm not important enough to have an Adobe sign in at my company. No, I'm kidding. But all my designers have been playing around with that. And again, there's a lot more advanced stuff out there. I'm just not there yet. You can find more advanced stuff, but I've just been like, I'm crawl, walk, run. And I feel like just practicing with my prompting on things like ChatGPT and Midjourney I've learned a lot. You know, I'm going to get ready to try out some new stuff soon, probably.
Well, you know, it's not about, you know, the thing about all of these tools is they're all very shiny, right? And we can get lost in them. But it's about looking at the things which are going to save us the most time, maybe, that there's going to be more niche applications of the technology that comes out, which will be more useful for a small group of people, maybe.
Can I ask, can we reverse? I'm going to break your rules, Joe. I would love to know, like, if anybody else is using stuff that they think is just bonkers and awesome. Cause like I said, like, I'm just a marketer who's trying to do things quicker. So I saw some stuff, writer.com, Jasper. Yeah. I saw a note in here, like, we've been doing some simple translations, but it is, to your point, like, I wouldn't go publish anything. Like, I wouldn't go run an ad in a non-English market with the translations I get, but we've been doing some stuff there. Grammarly, what's Claude? Okay, sorry. Didn't mean to ruin the flow. I'm just curious what other people are using.
But so Rachel says Claude is free, better than ChatGPT for copy, which is really interesting.
Okay. Like,
the interesting thing about your answer there is, like, on top of everything that was said, was the implication that there's stuff, and I quite consciously asked the question at the beginning, who's consciously using AI of Edo? Because actually, it's going to be an interesting thing that over, as this thing develops, that it slowly becomes underneath the surface. You know, ChatGPT is a very easy way to access an AI assistant, researcher, intern, whatever you want to call them. But folks are actually integrating these AI things into their systems, which you will never know about. And that's the interesting thing, that sort of 3, 4, 5 years in the future, that feels like where it's kind of going. But I don't know whether that's an opinion that you share as well.
I think you're 100% right. Like, the technology is so big, it's like, are you using the internet today? And you're like, what do you mean? Like, I'm connected to it 24/7. And if you research sort of outside of marketing, a lot of the folks that talk about the best use case is like data optimization and stuff happening invisibly that you'd never see. So not a marketing use case, but one of the more interesting things I actually worked on when I was at BBDO, we worked for Facebook's AI department. So the guy that invented check writing technology, his name is Jan LeCun. And he's seen as like this, if you Google him, like the smartest guy in AI in the world. Mark Zuckerberg just gave him a blank check and was like, you don't have to work on Facebook. You just have to do AI stuff. So they started Facebook Artificial Intelligence Research Program, where he's not working on anything for Meta. He's just doing like stuff. And one thing we worked on was, it was called Fast MRI. So usually if you ever had an MRI, you sit in a box for 60 minutes and you keep getting these scans over. And it's like, if you have anxiety, it's the worst thing in the world. Specifically if you're a little kid, like I have a 4-year-old, imagine getting an MRI. I can barely get him to sit still for breakfast, but sit still on an MRI. So what they were able to do is it takes 60 minutes of scans to get a picture full enough to see what's going on in the human body. But when you plug in AI to an MRI machine and they called it fMRI, it would take about 10 minutes. Because they had uploaded millions of MRI images that they could get to like 15% clarity and then finish the rest of it. And that's that sort of just like mass data, sort of like thousands and thousands of examples. And I think those are the sorts of things that we might not hear about as much, especially as marketers, but that could hypothetically, you know, change the world. And it's less of like talking to a robot to help you do stuff. And it's more of just like crunching an insane amount of data.
I love Tia's message in the chat here, which says, what beautiful madness. It is beautiful madness. It's definitely mad, but in a really, really interesting way. You mentioned taking the stuff that you prompted Midjourney with to legal. And that's really interesting, you know, just on yourself. But we've got John in the chat who's asking in the Q&A, what are the risks you and the team have encountered when using AI for content creation?
I think we're just getting started. So it started with me trying to read the disclaimer on Midjourney. I'd probably put it into ChatGPT to tell me what it actually said. I would go sit with your legal team, because I think it's going to be different in every industry depending on how conservative they are. I'm lucky, I work in social media, so we're a bit progressive. If I work for a bank, they'd probably tell me to buzz off. I think that right now, like, one, I think it's how you prompt it, right? Like, we're not trying to create images that look like celebrities. Like, I've seen tools coming out of places where you can get fake influencers, like you can sort of deep fake influencers and stuff like that. That to me is highly, highly questionable, highly litigious. We were using it to create like simple stuff that was a little better than stock. And I personally didn't see too much risk in it. I would say, and it could just be how I approach things. I mean, if you are a big brand, the fact that you don't own it is a risk. So if you create stuff, there's no reasons your competitors couldn't copy and paste it off your website. If you create something that works and somehow your competitors knows it, there's no reason they can't take and copy it. That's sort of the biggest risk we see from the way we're using it. But I think the biggest risk, depending on how you're using it, and law often doesn't keep up with technology, is going to be all the stuff with deepfake. Because if you go into Midjourney, I don't know how they do it. Every time I try to do something goofy with celebrities, it comes out looking like, you know, like their cousin. But you can go on and you can see Donald Trump getting arrested in DC and the Pope wearing Balenciaga. So like, you know, I think there's going to be a ton of interesting legal conversations about use with image generation when it comes to that. And I see stuff on Instagram that gets served to me that you can kind of tell is AI. We should talk about that, because I think we're much closer to people pointing out AI and saying bad ad AI than we think. But there's some stuff I see where I'm like, who approved this? Like, you know, it's obviously fake. They're trying to mimic somebody that does exist that could sue them. So
100%, you know, it's scary and interesting, and it's going to have a huge impact going forwards. I mean, I'm curious, because, you know, Hootsuite is a company that has developed a version of an AI implementation. So what was your thought process in sort of coming to that solution where you're like, you know what, AI is going to be the solution to the problem that we've identified, because there presumably would have been a multitude of ways to go about it. So how did you end up in that place, and why is it really important to have AI at this stage?
You're a good host. I told you I wasn't going to shill, but now you said
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We make tech. We make AI. We make. I was going to build authenticity with our audience, and then make them feel bad for not checking out our website. Guilt is the most effective marketing tactic. So what's interesting enough is it is so. We map our pain points. This is like a non AI tip that I learned sort of in digital marketing. Is that my search team can tell us based on pay-per-click, based on SEO, sort of the top problems of my audience. Yeah. Hold on, we got a four-year-old. Get out of here. Get out of here. Hold on. Real time, 8 a.m. Billy, say hi to everybody. Hi. All right, now get out of here.
That's amazing. That was so much better handled than the BBC one from a few years ago. Congratulations.
Yeah, That's little Billy. So we were able to map our top pain points. So as the point is, Google will tell you what your audience cares about most and their biggest pain points. For us, it's content inspiration, right? Like you sit at the thing, it's what we talked about. It's the blank page. It's like, I need to come up with ideas. Funny enough, before we created the AI tool, we created a tool called Content Inspiration, which was trying to prompt you from a non-AI base based on what we knew worked on the platform with like, hey, it's an upcoming holiday. Like, hey, it's Friday. Talk about, you know, your company's success or how it was founded. And then in a hackathon, right when ChatGPT became a thing, we created a tool called OlliWriter. Within 2 weeks, we deprecated the old one because OlliWriter was being used more often. It was more valuable to people. So like we had two ways of attacking the same problem, which is like, I need social ideas. And I think the usability and the open-endedness of the OlliWriter, because it's conversation-based versus like a set number of prompts, led users to use it much more. So for our social media tool, I always promote too, like you could automate a month worth of posts if you wanted to. You could plug it in, you could map out all of next month. But I think using it to get to those ideas quicker, looking at it, tweaking it, and using it to come up with a month full of ideas is the way to use it. But ours was quite simple, like, and it's to the earliest use case of AI, which is this idea of content generation. We do have like an AI chatbot for customer service, which is really, really simple. So I think there's a stat that something like 80% of the questions you get asked as a company, no matter the category, are like the same 10 questions. And that probably makes sense, right? Like if you're in DTC, it's like, where's my order? Insert your category, like I need access to my checking account, whatever it may be. So you can create really simple, really, really dumb AI to handle the chat for you, because 80% of your volume is going to be the same 10 things and people expect an answer really, really quickly. So you can plug in, like we have something where it's like, give us your top 10 FAQs. We can create a conversational AI around it. Anybody reaches out to you on social media, like we can kind of take care of things and route them where they need to go. So those are the two biggest use cases. And then based on some of the side chat in our chat earlier, like we're starting to do some stuff, but I think in marketing in general, like there's going to be a company that's going to make $1 billion figuring out how to use AI and analytics and ROI and complex attribution and mixed media modeling and all those things that we all wish was quite simple. I have a feeling there's going to be some folks that come up with something that's going to help us with that holy grail of attribution and econometrics.
If someone solves attribution, like I've been in marketing for 10 years-ish now. And I swear for all of those 10 years, folks have been, you know, sort of saying the words, attribution is solved. It's done. You know, we know where everything has come from ever. And it's the lie. And it's such a bad lie to tell as well. So, if someone nails it, it's going to be.
There's really smart people working right now of at least making it 5% better so they can sell you on it.
100%. And what are the interesting or surprising ways that you've seen folks use your AI? And again, I'm not trying to sort of like, I know you're not trying to shield, but like it's interesting from the other side to sort of see like how folks are actually using these platforms and like, that's interesting or surprising. because we're all trying to figure this out. So presumably you have a little bit of behind the scenes on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had better data pulls on how they're using it. I would say it's not that sophisticated to start. Like, I wish I had some really clever answer, but the pain point is just like, I need help coming up with stuff. Mm-hmm. I would say what's more interesting to your point is if you look at the queries, it's more open-ended than maybe we thought, which I think talks about the behavior of it. You know, people aren't necessarily saying, I need a post idea about X.
Yeah.
It's actually a deeper problem of I need a post idea, which I think is, I think that's quite interesting. And the fact that we can help is quite interesting. Like it is, I think when we came up with it, we thought it would be social media managers that were 50% there that needed copy. They needed copy. They didn't need ideas. They needed copy. But I think what we're learning is more and more people are using it to get the ideas. And then the human comes in, adds a little bit of copy polish, which is a little different than what we thought. But in hindsight, it makes sense because I find myself using it sort of similarly.
Interesting. I mean, that is fascinating to have it as that way around. So, you know, when I use it, most typically ChatGPT, this is, I'm trying to get better at my column writer. And so I'll write the column and then go back and ask it to use it as an editor. And even if it's a few prompts to improve my writing as a long form piece of writing, it's dead, dead useful. To hear folks open it out in that way and just say, give me a post idea, that's really fascinating. I don't think that's neither good or bad, is it? It's just interesting that that's the way that folks are using
it. Yeah, I mean, another one that I've learned, and I see people on the right-hand side talking about people to follow. So if you're interested, if this is Joe, you probably know this person. I feel like you've become the center of the LinkedIn marketing universe. I mean, you've talked to Mark Ritson. That's the equivalent of Michael Jordan. Like from a strategy perspective, if you've ever heard of Julian Cole. So Julian Cole is an old comm strategist at BBDO. He kind of, like, he probably thinks I stalk him because I always go to LinkedIn to click and look at his past posts as I'm doing stuff. But he created a whole guide and it's free if you go back to his posts. And it talks about how to use ChatGPT to come up with brand strategy and briefs. And it's so clever, the prompts that he has, the questions you ask about the company. But in doing that, what I've taken and what I think is really, really interesting in terms of writing is like ChatGPT understands frameworks. AI understands frameworks, right? So I was writing, on Monday, it was a Canadian holiday. So I work for a Canadian company and I had a to-do list. And part of my job is like, I manage a creative department. So, you know, a lot of my job is figuring out, okay, task A, strength, match these people up. I thought I'd be nice. And I was bored a little bit on Monday. So I was like, you know what, like, I'm going to get on the tools again. So I was like, there was just like a product sort of, you know, trial email we needed to get out. And I was researching different like behavioral based email formats, right? Like there is data that suggests like use this sort of template. So there was a attention, interest, desire, action, famous like email template version. Mm-hmm. I plugged into ChatGPT. This is who I'm working with. There's the product. Here's my audience. Please help me write an email based on the attention, interest, desire, action framework. And again, I didn't take it, copy and paste it and put it in, but they broke everything down in a way that worked for an email. And I didn't tell the email folks that I started with AI, but they're like, man, this is really good. Like for somebody that hasn't written in a while, I'm like, I know. I didn't mention the robots, but like Julian Cole, when he's on there, like the way he thinks about it is like, it gets the frameworks. There's enough data to talk about like another famous one, BBDO, every creative brief that BBDO all over the world, no matter what country you're in, uses the get who to buy. Get this person who feels this way to do this thing by this value proposition. So if you're working on something and saying, hey, I'm working on bank X, talking to these people, help me with a get who to buy brief. They understand the framework and they spit it out in this way. And then that's where you add those adjectives. Make it insightful, make it memorable, make it punchy, write it like Jerry Seinfeld. Like you start playing with frameworks and adjectives and ways of speaking. And that's where I think it gets like really interesting and fun.
It's mad. And thank you for all those suggestions. So like just to summarize, because there's one of the top questions here in the Q&A was about how to get better at prompts. And so the frameworks answer for you is brilliant. And then the iteration on tone would be really, really useful. I think what's also interesting is, like, I don't know whether it's a ChatGPT only feature presently, but I've changed the tone in which they can answer back to me. So I got a little prompt a little while ago. It's in settings, and you can say, you know, how should ChatGPT reply to you? And so for me, it was like, you know, I wanted it to be a bit more informal, because that's, you know, my language and stuff like that. And, like, to be honest, it's gone a bit too far. It's chatting to me like a mate, and I'm like, you know, just back off a little bit. You know,
drink my talk. Yeah.
But, like, there's ways to even sort of by default prompt it. And you can even give it context and stuff, like, it was asking me about my business. And so I could say, you know, the marketing meetup was this. And then it's got a little bit more context as well in these answers, which is just really, really interesting. So thank you for that. I mean, just to pick up on that question. So you've mentioned frameworks quite brilliantly there, and also some resources. Do you have any other sort of hot tips for prompting that you've particularly got a lot out of, just before we move on across that bit?
Let me look at my notes. Trying to think of what else I had. I mean, I think you mentioned it, like, a lot of what we've been talking about is the assistant, but like the editor aspect of it, like, I think that's such a simple use case, and maybe I've become addicted now, but I mean, like, I put ChatGPT in everything. So I often am a little long-winded, and a lot of my job is creating decks, lucky me, right? But like sales talks for CMOs and CEOs and stuff like that. And I'll write my outline version of it. So the way I work is I'll sit in Google Docs, I'll write the header, the body, try to keep it simple, the image, that's my workflow. I punch the whole thing into ChatGPT and say, like, reduce any unnecessary words. Nice. Like, simple stuff like that. Like, again, it's not rocket science, but that's 100%. Like, I don't even think about it now, right? So at that starting point, I feel like I'm at an 8 of usage, and some of it's just started to be automatic. Like, I've got two screens you can see. Like, one has just got ChatGPT up, and whatever I'm trying to write and trying to persuade, which is basically any communication I would imagine, It tends to make it a little punchier and more economical, because all of us probably have a couple extra words in there.
100%. As a sort of a shared plight of being overly verbose, then I'm so with you. I want to ask the community, by the way, because there are some brilliant suggestions on resources. If you pop in the chat, if you've got any suggestions on resources or people folks should be following, then please do pop them in there, because it would be lovely to capture some of the shared resources that we can put in the follow-up email, and also the write-up of today's event, because I'm sure that there's other people to follow and resources to get as well. So
my morning is I move from coffee to, like, a veggie-based drink. So if you're wondering if I'm drinking 3 ounces of just, like, absolute veggie drink with a chopstick in it to stir it up, that's 100% what I'm doing, and I'm not shy about it. So one, I needed to prompt that. The second one is Olivia Charles, I think, has a really important note in there, which is the idea of, depending on the AI you're using, whatever you put in gets fed into their algorithm and is public. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things you can do with that I've learned too. So if you work for a company, companies are now creating AI guidelines, but you can actually go into your settings of ChatGPT and block them from using the intel you're putting in into being feeding their algorithm. And then another thing is, some tools are using closed data sets. So last time I talked about Hootsuite, unless Joe prompts me, but we very specifically, we do a lot of work in finance. We do a lot of work in government. We do a lot of work in healthcare. So we very particularly, instead of just putting ChatGPT and making that the engine of our AI generation, we used a closed data set, so that when people were putting stuff in, it was like, we can extract from the AI, but we don't put back in. And I do think as companies get smarter, there's a, like, I think ChatGPT, there's some European laws around it now. So that is a part that I think companies don't realize. It's a lot of these things, if you put it in there, so if you're going to take the data of your company, your sales data, private or public, and put it in there, like, it is public. So I would watch out for that. And if you work in a conservative industry or for a conservative company, there are ways to sort of block that bi-directional data flow. So I just thought that was a pretty, pretty important part. Mm-hmm. Stuff, again, we're learning, because we just got emails, you know, I'm a tech company, and so we have a lot of people in AI. So our CTO is the one that said, like, this is how we use it or else.
Interesting. That's fascinating. I mean, like, I guess a lot of people don't have access to that sort of CTO sort of telling them how to use things. Dude, that drink is so huge. That's so fun.
I know.
But I don't know. Was there anything else interesting or that comes from that sort of advice where folks have sort of, because as I say, we'll have a lot of people here who come from companies where it's just them, you know, or it's a very, very small team. Is there any advice that, you know, from a larger company that you could offer folks that they just may not have access to if they didn't have, as an example, the CTO? It's a bit of a broad question, so like, sorry for that.
No, you're good. I feel like there must be, like, I'm such a believer in like the LinkedIn feed. If somebody isn't preaching CTO advice for AI for people that don't have CTOs, maybe we'll do some research and add it to the meeting notes. I guess I'm lucky, right? That was a bit of an eye opener for us of like AI policies, but I would say in general, assume that whatever you're putting in is public, feeding an algorithm. So just assume that until otherwise stated, because that's how most of them are built.
Yes, perfect. And speaking of how these things are built, then Wendy comes in with a question. We're also speaking later in this season. So Wendy asks, is there any way to reduce the bias within the AI tools with the way that we use it or the questions that we ask? Because of course, these things are just taking in a big old data set, right? And so that's quite tricky because it's representative of the internet, not necessarily of objective truth or whatever. So
I think that's going to be one of the most interesting philosophical questions of the next 5 to 10 years. So again, having worked on some stuff, if the algorithm pulls from data that's publicly available, how humans live, would you say humans are biased? We would all say yes. And if you don't say that, then you're biased against something. I don't know. So what's interesting is like the role of these big tech companies is, do you feed on public data, which is flawed? We live in a flawed society with flawed points of views and bias across the board. Or do you try to tweak it to make it this sort of data set of a place we wish to live? And who has the ability and the right to do that? And hypothetically, we don't want tech companies to do that. Like, I think that is an insanely interesting philosophical question in terms of like even if you play around with Midjourney right now and people have done stuff where it's like, ask for a doctor, they'll give you a male, probably a white one. So it's like, I think it's an unfortunate reality. I think as marketers, similar to how, you know, I think marketers take some pride in being able to try to make change, right? In some ways, and I'm not saying we're politicians or anything like that, but a lot of culture is hypothetically normalized through, you know, advertising and marketing and what people are exposed to. I don't know of a way to get rid of the bias in the existing data, but I think there's things we can do to add some human elements to how we prompt to try to flip the bias. Like, I almost think it's the opposite. I think you have to fight the bias in how you prompt. So I wish that was a better answer, but I think it's a really interesting conversation. And similarly, as marketers or advertisers, when we're creating stuff, I think we have to put a human moral, hopefully, acknowledgement of bias into the work that we do, because it's always going to exist.
I guess that speaks to so many of the themes of the question. So Tristan, who actually went to school with, was speaking about the dangers of AI being relied on too heavily and the bad possible outcomes. And I think that really speaks to that. You know, we have to be aware. I think the first step feels like awareness, you know, that these things are, and that's where the data comes from. And then that's why a human has to intervene as well. You know, we have to be able to take in, granted it's taking the data set from the world, the internet, but then we have to apply it into our context and also for the benefit of the human beings that we're reaching and helping inform and all those sort of things. So that feels just really important.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's gonna be so much on that. There's some, but it's only going to get more and more interesting as people hypothetically not sitting and having conversations like this start plugging AI into their workflow and get surprised when things pop out on the other end that are biased, because it's going to happen, right? Like you kind of assume these machines are right, and they're not. There's no right. It's still subjective. It's not objective.
So, and you know, like, that's, you know, just a really important point. You know, today we're speaking about how to use AI to save time, and you know, that doesn't mean taking out humans. You know, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's both. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And it's a really interesting and important point that we can't lose as part of this. I want to make sure that we're capturing the questions from the community, but I also don't want to go back and repeat stuff that we've asked already. So let's take a question. I mean, folks, if you see a question that's particularly wonderful and you want to give it a thumbs up, then do, because that will end
up. It's a good moment for a massive drink of veggie drink.
So let's continue on that thread. So, you know, we're sort of speaking a little bit about the philosophy and stuff like that. And there's an anonymous attendee who came in quite early. He said, how do we improve education around AI? Let's leave it at that. How do we improve education around AI? Is it this? You know, is it just conversations around it? Is it using it? Because there's so much out there, and the LinkedIn feed is endlessly confusing. But you know, do we need to be doing more, or is it just playing with it?
First answer is, Lucia, it tastes awful. It tastes awful, but I don't eat vegetables, so I just drink it because I am I'm basically a robot. I inject my veggies. I think that's a really interesting question. One thing that I could hypothesize is, like, how do you build some of that into the UI and the UX? Mm-hmm. If you think about the tools that are the most widely adopted, being ChatGPT and Midjourney, hypothetically, it's the two we're talking about. I know ChatGPT is, right? Like, it got to a billion users in like 2 days, and it took Netflix like 3 years. There's not a real UI to it or a UX to it. It's a chat, right? So like, there's such an open-endedness to it that I wonder if they're going to need to bake in more of, let's just call these bias killers and blockers into the experience of it. Because like, I'm not smart enough to close my eyes and think about, like, once they start thinking about the user experience of some of these tools, and maybe they've done the research, I doubt it though. Like, they came out with this most simple UX they could, a chatbot that's existed since we were on AIM talking about, you know, what just happened on Jackass with our friends in seventh grade. You can probably tell my age from that. So really interesting when they start applying like really advanced UI and UX to this stuff, and how they can bake that into it is a hypothesis.
Well, that was the mad thing about it. I mean, to your point, these things existed. They've always existed. But it's the simplicity. It's being able to access it and speak with it. It's been a game changer. We're on ChatGPT 4. We're not on ChatGPT 1. You know, it's been a long, long time. We've got Emma in the chat who's saying you're clearly the same age as well. So
love it.
A bit of kinship. As we head into the last 10 minutes, then I just want to summarize, because there's a lot of questions around the same themes, but I feel like we've addressed a lot of them. And so we started off today sort of speaking about like some use cases. So I count briefing, I count segmentation, I count image generation. What else have we spoken about, Billy?
I think it's a great copy editor. There's also like stuff like general assistant. Like, we use simple plugins to our meetings that can transcribe stuff, give you sentiment analysis of how conversations went. I know sales teams are using those. So like a general assistant, an editor, a vision for non-visual executors, the
ability to same data analysis. So there's a bunch of them. And then we came into the prompting, right? And so, like, I loved your advice on specificity. So we've got adjectives, feels great. And then we've got frameworks, which actually that one for me wasn't something that I've done, but that feels particularly useful. We then got ethical stuff. And there's a lot on the legality and not feeding the machine anything that you don't want to, and also the setting change that you can make. So there's a bunch there. Folks, if you want to pop in the chat any more ideas on things that we haven't covered, because I'm looking in the Q&A right now, and there's a lot of things from legalities and potential copyright. Hopefully we covered that. We've got optimization and mastering the prompts. We've got where to stay up to date. We've been sharing the resources. And maybe we'll take this one from Anonymous, who says, what's the most creative way you or someone you know has used AR to facilitate marketing projects?
Jeez. man, I feel like I keep going back to the same stuff, but I would say for me, the most creative way as a person that manages a budget and a team of creative people is the idea of like, we would spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on stock photography, like a lot of money on stock photography. And I'm making my budget next year and I'm putting in $10 Midjourney subscriptions for people. Like, to me, that's wildly creative. Because I mean, that's thousands of dollars being saved. And I wish I didn't keep going back to that example. But to me, that's one of those mind blowing moments where it's like, it's going to upend hypothetically a whole industry. And I know Adobe's working on it. Yeah. And it's like they're coming up with their own image generation with what they know. But that to me is still the moment where I was like, okay, I need to lean into this thing. It's going to be part of my career for the future. No. I'd still take though, Callum, like they still can't make stuff as good as a photographer. Don't worry. I still got like 150 grand for content creation. So don't you worry about it. To me, it replaces stock, but nothing will beat the creative control, direction, and inspiration of working with creators.
And that's, I mean, maybe that's a lovely way to finish. I mean, what are the things that you see not changing? Because there's so much stuff happening right now. And it's all, like to quote here from earlier, it's beautiful madness. There's bunches of things that are happening. We've got Rachel in the chat sort of saying we still have to take real photos of products and stuff like that. So what doesn't change on them? You know, because like it's another.
I love this question because even though I may have just tried to kill the stock photography industry, to me, like AI as a replacement or buddy for tactical marketing is its value point. But the most, you know, like the competitive advantage in marketing, once everybody has the algorithms, means like your media buying is going to be the same. Your optimization is going to be the same. It's going to be ideas. It's going to be being able to connect dots of things to make new ideas. And that's where I take onus as a person from a creative background of saying like, I actually think ideas are going to become more important. Because everything's going to look the same and everything's going to sound the same. And you can try to use ChatGPT to come up with new ideas, but it's only going to spit out things that have ever existed. It's only going to do things that have existed before. And the best ideas are like connecting dots to create new things. And so I think like the way I'm trying to train our team is like, once we get a big idea, let's just call it a campaign for simplicity's sake. Like the biggest, highest reaching, most upper funnel pieces need to be unexpected to drive attention. I don't expect unexpected from a data source. And that's where I'm spending my time. Spend more time on coming up with that bigger, better idea. And then maybe we can save some time when it comes to inputting that idea to try to drive a trial in an email, right? And also you can tell ChatGPT, here's my campaign idea, human created unexpected brilliance. Just help me with a simple email to drive action. And that's where I think I'm headed is spend more time on ideas and use AI to help with the more tactical stuff. But you still need ideas. And ideas are going to be way, 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 way more important because everybody's going to have the same AIs.
So humans become simultaneously more and less important is where I kind of feel it is. But I mean, unexpected brilliance is a lovely way to surmise. Yeah, folks can spend a little bit more time as well. So thank you, Lee. Folks, that's a lovely way, I think, to draw today to a close. So thank you all for lighting up the chat, as you have. Thank you to Billy and little Billy for today.
Famous.
Your massive, massive drink. We've got a big old bunch of love being sent your way here, Billy. So thank you so much for sharing what you know. And also thank you to everyone in chat for also sharing your resources. We'll make sure we capture those in the chat file and the follow-up file, which goes out after today's session. Blooming appreciate you, Billy. Blooming appreciate everyone in the chat. Stephanie's asking for your veggie recipe, Billy. So if you don't mind sharing that as well, then we'll make sure we include that in the follow-up.
After today. Put that in the show. I believe in the biz, we call that. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. See, he's a pro. He's a pro. With all that said, thank you all so much for being here today. We return next week for a session on how to create goals for people who hate goal setting. And with all that said, we'll see you next week. And big thank you to Klaviyo, of course, for sponsoring today and the rest of our sponsors. If you get a second, please say a big thank you to those as well. Right. Take care, Billy, and take care, everyone.